Hey guys, this is A to Z Podcast. I'm Austin.
And I'm Zach.
We got another episode for you guys today. This one's going to be about movies, TV shows, and entertainment mostly. So just want to go ahead real quick, tell you how to find us. You can go to iTunes, you know, type A to Z Podcast, and that's the number 2. And you just hit enter, you scroll down to the bottom. We're the only people under the podcast section. You click, you download us, and we'll pick up every new episode that we post. Also, you can find us at our webpage, which is A to Z Podcast Spokane.podomatic.com. If you need to know how to spell that, go ahead and go back to our first few episodes, our first 3 or 4, and I spell that out for you guys. It's pretty simple, but the iTunes way is way easier to find us. So we're going to go ahead and get right into it. Our first topic today is going to be Broke, which will kind of lead us into the 30 for 30 series. And then Zach and I are going to go ahead and talk about some movies we think you guys should check out on Netflix, some TV shows that you guys should check out, some movies we're looking forward to, and a new TV show that just came out on the History Channel. We're going to touch on that and talk about our opinions. So first up, Broke. What did you think of it?
It's awesome. It's great. Great to have these 30 for 30s back. I think they're some of the best sports documentaries out there, you know. Broke in general, you know, like, it covers something that most people don't ever think about, and that's the fact that, I mean, the majority of athletes, after they leave their professional sport, file for bankruptcy, and it's really heartbreaking to see most of their stories. And I'm a player's guy. Like, I always side with the player. I never get mad at somebody for taking a lot of money, because, like, I understand where they're coming from. Almost all of them grew up in severe poverty, so make that money while you can. But they have no financial responsibility, so they just blow through their money. And it's just story after story about how they spent their millions of dollars. And you kind of feel bad for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. Like you, I side with the athlete in the sense that, you know, you got to go out and you got to get your money while you can. So I don't hold that against anybody. It's kind of the situation with Anquan Boldin right now. With the Baltimore Ravens, he didn't want to take a pay cut, so they just traded him, and I don't blame him. I mean, you're getting paid what you're getting paid, and why should you take a pay cut? I mean, they just paid Joe Flacco millions and millions of dollars, so I agree with him. You're right, though. The 30 for 30 is a great series, and we'll talk about that more here in just a second, but Broke specifically, I thought was really insightful, because, I mean, you hear about athletes going broke and going bankrupt and having no money literacy, and, you know, but you just don't realize to what scale, and this kind of puts it in perspective for you.
Yeah, and everybody thinks, like, oh, that'll never be me. Like, oh, I can't believe they wasted $50 million, and that would never be me. But of course it would be you, because you don't know how it affects you till you get that kind of money. And the one that always sticks with me is Bernie Kosar. And he was a quarterback for the Browns in the late 80s and early 90s. And him saying that he supported 30 families off his one paycheck, and then he paid for like 60 cell phone bills a month, which, like, blows my mind. And he wanted to get an agent, but his dad's like, no, we're going to keep this in the family. And how dare you bring somebody else in, you know? And his dad was like an alcoholic who blew all his money, you know.
Yeah, it was just stealing money from him.
Yeah, stealing money from him, you know. And it's just like, and what the thing that you kind of pick up on this documentary is they never want to be the guy that forgot where they came from, you know.
Yeah,
they always want to be the guy that lifts everybody out of poverty, as opposed to just taking care of themselves, which, I mean,
yeah. And I mean, can you blame them? Because you know, they think back to how they were raised and stuff, and you know, people did invest a lot of time in them. You know, they're a lot of them come from single parent households, so, you know, like, their mother really invested a lot of time in them, and then, you know, like, their high school coach really helped them along, and maybe a special teacher and stuff, and, you know, you feel obligated to help those people, but then you got the second cousin twice removed coming out and being like, oh, hey, remember that birthday I came to one time and I gave you $5?
Yeah,
and stuff like that, and that's 5,000. What really gets you.
And there's, like, tons of, like, that off, I can't remember his name, but that offensive lineman for, like, the Dolphins, he said, like, his family knew his pay schedule better than he did, and they'd just all be sitting out there waiting by his car, and they had to go pay he had to go pay for their car, you know? And it's just like...
Yeah, they'd ask him for money. They'd be like, oh, we'll pay you back, we'll pay you back. And of course, you never see a dime of that.
No. And, you know, Bart Scott's story in there about how he didn't even know about taxes coming out of his paycheck. You know, like, and so he's like, what's all this money missing from my paycheck? He thought somebody was stealing from him. And they're like, no, that's taxes, man. And he didn't even have a bank account, so he had to go to a check cashing place to cash his first NFL check. You know, it's like...
Yeah, it's crazy. Kind of going back to the whole Joe Flacco thing, you know, he just got this huge mega contract, and it was for the most money for a quarterback or player in the NFL, but in actuality, he's still not the highest paid player because he lives in Maryland, where they take income tax out, whereas Drew Brees lives in Louisiana where they don't. So Drew Brees is still gets more money than him, you know? And it's, I mean, if you're just a kid coming out of college and you just play football, you don't know stuff like that. So
exactly. And that's why, like, a lot of, that's why, like, a state like Florida also, which doesn't have an income tax, holds a huge advantage over, like, a team like, I don't know, the New York Giants. I don't know if New York charges an income tax, but I'll just use them. And like a team like the Dolphins can really sign free agents, and they can use that as a bargaining chip, saying that, you know, hey, come here and you get to keep more of your money as opposed to other teams who can't.
Yeah, exactly. So it was definitely an interesting 30 for 30. I highly recommend you watch it, as I think Zach would too.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it's just one of those things, it'll change your perspective on like a subject that when you hear stories about it, you think, how could they lose all that money? But it's one of the better ones. But
yeah,
speaking
for sure.
of better ones, let's kind of touch on this whole 30 for 30 subject, like all the movies in general. Every time I see the commercials for them, the voiceover acting for it, I think they're some of the best done things in sports right now. Would you not agree?
I absolutely agree. I think not only in sports, but just in the documentary world in general, I think they're first-class, first-rate, you know, documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to pick a favorite, what do you think your favorite 30 for 30 would be? Including, like, even the newer ones that aren't technically part of the first 30, but, you know, are still under the label.
I really, really liked Silly Little Game, and it was one that was all about the first people that invented fantasy sports in the 1980s, with the Rotisserie League Baseball League, and then it kind of goes and explains how that started and kind of branches out. But that's one I enjoyed, but probably my favorite one, just because like it touches like on so many human emotions and relationships, is Once Brothers. And it's a story of two Croatian and a Serbian, well, it's one Croatian, one Serbian basketball players who were best friends, and they played on the Yugoslavian national team, and how one little incident ruined their friendship, and then ultimately one of them dies early. I mean, it's pretty apparent in the film. He's not in the film at all. And it's just really, like, it's a raw emotion that you can sense, and it's just, like, a really, really good documentary, and it does all the things right. And, I mean, it takes a guy that Vlade Divac, and, you know, back in the NBA in the 90s, he was, like, kind of known as, like, this European flopper guy, and you can really put a person behind the face, and just really, really good.
Yeah, I agree. That definitely is up there. If I had to pick, this is my go-to 30 for 30 when anybody asks me about it, and it's The Best That Never Was. I mean, it's the longest by far. It's a whole 2 hours, but like Once Brothers, it also, I think, kind of touches on a lot of human emotions and just, you know, how people take advantage of other people, and, you know, if you're not put in the right situation, you can't succeed. It's kind of...
Yeah, I agree with all those things. It's great.
Yeah, it makes me think of that Albert Einstein saying that's been going around. You know, it's like, everybody's a genius, but if you try to get a fish to climb a tree, of course he's going to look like a dumbass, you know?
Yeah. And yeah, a little paraphrasing there at the end.
Yeah, yeah. But that's kind of how I feel, because when he goes to Oklahoma, and this is a story about Marcus Dupree, he was a running back, and he was like the number one recruit in the nation by a long shot. I mean, this dude just looked like a man among boys in high school and in college.
Yeah.
And he goes to Oklahoma, and the coach there just...
Misuses him.
Yeah, keeps telling him, you're really not that good. We're thinking about switching you to tight end. And he's, like, the best running back in the nation. And
he's
coach
the best
just,
player on their team.
Yeah, by far. Freshman. I mean, they changed their whole offensive scheme to fit him. And, you know, it's tough to watch him go through that. And then you think, like, man, we really missed out on a talent. Because he could have... Like, what he could have been. I mean, that's why it's called The Best That Never Was, because...
Well, it touches on a lot of good things, too, about, like, coaching styles and maybe sports psychology and how you're supposed to handle star players, because there's a lot of different theories on it, you know? There's the ones where it's like you have to be harder on your stars because you can't be shown, like, weakness that you're letting it easy on them, but some players can't handle that. You know, like, and Marcus Dupree's an example of that. He's a guy that he was so phenomenally good that he can't go hard in practice because he's got to save himself for the games. But you just have to trust that he is going to do whatever it takes in the games, and the players are going to love him for it, you know? But that's not what the coach at Oklahoma did. He rode him too hard, and it broke him, you know? And
yeah,
plus he gets some really unfortunate injuries, and... It's just one of those things that it makes you think, you know?
Yeah, by far. So you really can't go wrong watching either one of those. If you're just trying to, get started in the 30 for 30 series or anything like that, those are also, you know, two really well-done ones.
Yeah, if you're trying to just get started in them, pick one that is about the sport that you love the most. Like, if you're really into hockey, watch King's Ransom. Or if you're really into soccer, watch... The two Escobars, you know? Now, there are some bad ones, definitely, or ones that I didn't enjoy as much, you know?
Sure. And I think that's kind of, like you're saying, you know, you start with the ones you like the most, and then you kind of go to the ones you don't like the most. We were just talking, you know, the straight out of L.A. one really wasn't to our fancy. We don't really connect much with the Raiders at all. We don't connect with LA as a city, and we don't connect with rap for music, you know, so that, I mean, it was kind of three strikes right there for us.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, I just, the way they did it, it wasn't my favorite because it just like followed Ice Cube and Snoop Dogg around. And I mean, I found that kind of boring, but other people might find that really entertaining.
What do you think had the best subject matter, like out of all of them?
One that kind of touched with me, and I don't know if it had, you know, the best subject matter, but for me in today's day and age, the Pony Excess one.
I was just gonna say the same thing. It's but continue.
Yeah, it just touches on how much like cheating or under the table, or you know, just what's wrong with college sports. And I'm not saying that players shouldn't be paid, because I mean, they do make their schools millions and millions and millions of dollars at the big schools, but then at the smaller schools, sports cost, you know, the schools to play. So there's a fine line, but that one for me, the subject matter was really pertinent to what's going on in today's day and age.
Yeah, I completely agree. It came on right after the Heisman, which I thought was hilarious. And I think that year was the year that Cam Newton won the Heisman.
And all of his drama.
Yeah, all his drama. And he totally got paid. And, like, you talk to anybody, like, that really, really knows, and every college star gets paid. Like, though, yeah, they're just student-athletes. But, no, that's not how it works. And I have a very simple solution for college athletics. You let players do promotions for anything. Like, hey, you want to be in a Nike commercial at 18? Go for it. You want to do a local car ad that's going to get you a few thousand bucks from Jake's dealership or whatever? Yeah, go for it. You know, like, then it covers every spectrum. It covers female athletes. It covers big-time athletes. It covers the small-time athletes at really small schools that can do, like, a local promotion for a supermarket or something. Mm-hmm. And it kind of blankets everybody, and it allows them to make the free market that we live in. It allows the free market to dictate exactly how much they should be paid. But
yeah,
now
I think
whether
that's
you
want to
argue,
yeah.
whether you want to argue an 18-year-old shouldn't get a $25 million shoe contract, I'll agree with you there, but that's a whole different argument.
That was the movie that I felt, you know, just embodies kind of what's going on right now, and, you know...
It's got a lot of great scenes. I mean, for those of you who don't know, back in the 80s, the SMU football program had some of like the best running backs that came through, and they got the death penalty for paying their players, which hasn't happened since. And there's a great scene in there where the guy who gives the death penalty is so nervous about giving it that when he walks out, he completely faints.
And he's a wreck.
He's a wreck for having delivered such terrible news. But I would say, like, if... That one has probably one of the more interesting subject matters just because, like, it's something that still happens today, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. If there was another 30 for 30 that you would recommend highly, what other one do you think? You know, give some more choices.
I would say actually one that just came out a little bit ago, and that was You Don't Know Bo. I thought that it was a picture, like, it was celebratory of a person, yet it leads you into how amazing one person can be. And it's almost a little bit along the lines of The Greatest That Never Was, because there's something tragic that happens in it. But it's really, really remarkable to see the athletic prowess in a pre-steroid era of somebody and everything that they could accomplish, you know?
Yeah. If I had to recommend another one, one that I found really interesting and just sort of fun to watch was the June 17th, 1994 one.
Yeah.
Where, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff just happened on the same day.
Yeah, I would say out of all the documentaries, it's the most original and without a doubt the most difficult to make. Like, some of these are really straightforward, you know, it's just like you do the interviews and you chop it together, but that one is, it's really creative look at a documentary, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So those are two more that we definitely recommend. As a series, though, we think you guys should watch them. Even some of the lesser ones, like we were saying, that we didn't enjoy as much, were still really well done. Yeah. It's, you know, it's not for lack of effort, it's just subject matter as it pertains to yourself.
I mean, even that one about the transgender tennis player was like, I mean, I could care less about a 1970s transgender. I think she was an eye surgeon, right? But
yeah, mm-hmm.
I mean, I was captivated, like, watched the whole thing and then had thought about it about days, about how it made me reconsider women transgender in sports and everything. And I mean,
yeah, that's the thing with me that the 30 for 30 series does so well, is that even if it's something that you don't really enjoy, the process just, like, captivates you, like you said, you know? It just, it sucks you in.
It does what any good documentary should do, and it makes you interested and makes you watch about things that you normally would never care about.
Yeah, exactly. So we highly recommend 30 for 30. So that'll keep you guys busy for a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, if sports documentaries aren't your thing, which they aren't for a lot of people, you know, Zach and I have come up with three movies each that we think you guys should definitely watch. What are one of yours?
And another thing, almost all of the 30 for 30s are on Netflix Instant Stream. So it's a great way to catch up on most of them. I think there are a few exceptions, but more than enough to keep you busy for hours. But like Austin said, I'm going to give you some, I'll give you three movies. We'll kind of go back and forth about some movies that you need to watch on Instant Stream. I checked as of yesterday and all of these movies are still on there. So hopefully that by the time you get around to listening to this and watching them, they'll still be there. My number one, without a doubt, is Drive. It was probably my favorite movie of 2011 or 2012. It's up there. It's one of my top five favorite movies of the last couple years.
Yeah, for a movie with a main character that says like 50 words the entire movie.
Yeah, and he doesn't have a name. His name's Driver.
Like, yeah.
It's a throwback to old school classic 80s action movies. And it's a retelling of the story of the Scorpion and the Frog. And I'm sure most people are familiar with that story. It's original. It's creative. Some of the shots in there, the long driving sequences, are awesome. And if you're not captured within the first scene, which is a getaway driving scene, then the movie's not going to do it for you. Like, it's got a lot of cool kind of newer cars in there, and it's just suspenseful, and then it takes a twist halfway through that I'm not going to ruin for anybody. But it's like a... it's artfully done, you know, like it makes the nerdy film person inside me very happy when I see some of these things, because I like cars, but I'm not really that big of a gearhead. So to see it done in this style, plus it has some of the best music, maybe besides Tron, that you're going to hear in a movie.
If you're looking for Fast and the Furious, though, this isn't the movie for you at all. This isn't.
To be honest, yeah, that's right. If you're looking for Fast 7, you're going to have to wait a few more months. But if you want a really done movie, and not just one that you can turn your mind off to, watch Drive. I highly recommend it. It does have the forced love story in there, but I think every movie has that now.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that it was a well-done movie. It's unlike a lot that I've seen. You know, it's definitely a unique movie. Another movie that I think you should see is another documentary. Or documentary kind of, and it's Jiro Dreams of Sushi, and it is about a really extremely successful...
It's the world's best, right? He's the world's best sushi artist.
Yeah, well, it's pretty much, I mean, there's a few other guys that I'm sure could be at his level, but yeah, he is world-renowned for his sushi-making ability, and it's like $30,000 to make a reservation at this guy's place or something ridiculous like that, and that's just for the reservation, and then you also have to pay like $200 per plate that you eat, and he only makes a certain amount of plates, and you can't like skip out on plates, or you can't order more. You get what you get. You go there and he serves you the 22 plates or whatever it is, and you eat them because he's like that good. It kind of shows, like, him sort of, like, growing up, like, the path that he took and how anal retentive he is in his details. And it, you know, it interviews some of his employees that are learning under him. And it shows his two sons, because in Japanese culture, the oldest son is supposed to follow in the father's footsteps. So the oldest son is waiting for his father to retire or to pass away to inherit the store. And then the younger brother is already off in like another part of Tokyo at his own restaurant doing his own thing, but still, you know, like in his father's shadow and stuff. And it's just a really well done documentary. It's really interesting. I mean, I never thought I would ever care so much about sushi in my life. It just touches you sort of to see how much he cares about what he does. I mean, he is a master of his craft, and it just shows you that no matter what you do, if you invest the time, you can learn to master your craft and become super successful, and that's kind of what he epitomizes.
Well, it also makes you feel that whatever you're best at, you'll never be as good as he is at making sushi.
Sushi, yeah.
So give up on your dreams, you know?
Yeah, no, it's really impressive, and it looks friggin' delicious, too. I mean, shots are like, mm-mm-mm.
I do love some sushi. I was watching a quick tangent. I was watching Anthony Bourdain the other day, and he was talking to a master sushi artist in New York, and he asked him, how long did it take you to learn just to make the rice for sushi? And he said something ridiculous, like 7 years, like 10 years, something like
that.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just to learn how to make rice the way that his master sushi artist taught him, you know?
Yeah, that's what they say. If I'm not mistaken, you have to be like a trainee for 10 years or something like that before he allows you to like call yourself an actual sushi chef. Or I can't remember the Japanese names for it, but...
Well, moving on, I'm actually going to bring up another sports documentary, which you guys are probably tired of hearing about, but this one is the Mac Daddy of sports documentaries. It's widely considered one of the greatest overall documentaries of all time. It was groundbreaking when it was made. It's still groundbreaking today. It kind of influences how we view and look at sports documentaries. And I'm talking about Hoop Dreams. It was just recently added back onto Netflix. It is the story of two young African-American boys growing up in Chicago, I do believe, and it kind of follows them from eighth grade all the way through their senior year and into college, and tells you what they do after college. And it is incredibly interesting. It's heartbreaking. It's everything that you want in an awesome documentary. It's about basketball, and you're never going to, because you see them grow up right before your eyes, like, you become really, really invested in who they become. And I mean, it's one of the better documentaries you'll ever see, without a doubt. And it's on Instant. So, what did you think of Hoop Dreams?
I totally agree with you, what you said about, you know, you become invested in them because you watch them grow up. I mean, they follow them since they're just little kids playing at, like, the parks with the older kids. And, you know, their trials and tribulations of, you know, trying to get into private school and finding the funding and, you know, then trying to figure out what they want to do for college. And, you know, I mean, it's just really interesting. And the fact that they were the two boys that they selected ended up, like, following the paths that they did was pretty amazing, because it made for a really good documentary. I mean, they could have picked two boys that just played in high school, went to some college and totally flopped or whatever, you know, and not saying, like, these guys went on to be NBA All-Stars or anything, but it's just the fact that of who they chose, I thought was impressive.
One of the boys is, like, one of the top players in the nation, and then another boy, reading about this in the behind the scenes, it was just supposed to be about the one boy, the one guy who is good. He's like the number two player in the nation or something crazy like that, or the number two player in the state, in a state that is huge on basketball. And then they were just watching this kid play basketball, and then another boy who was in eighth grade had an incredibly quick first step, and they're kind of like basketball expert said, no, this is the kid that you need to watch. And they do, and then it just kind of, it's two polar opposite stories and two opposite characters, and how they make their way through high school and learn to become men, and then the decisions that they make. It's, I mean, it's what the reason why we, like, have such great sports documentaries now is because the foundation was made by Hoop Dreams.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree, their stories are totally separate, like their lifestyles and stuff, but at the same time it's parallel too, which I think is what really tugs at you. It's like they're doing stuff way different, but it's almost the same though. It's kind of hard to explain. You'd have to watch it to understand it, I think, but definitely, like you said, it's kind of the granddaddy of all sports documentaries. It's what started it and kind of how we got to where we are today. Another sort of sporty movie is one about snowboarding. It's done by Travis Rice, who is a phenomenal snowboarder. He's not so huge in, like, the X Games action sports scene, kind of like that, because he does more stuff like this, and that's The Art of Flight. And there's a TV series and the movie on Netflix. And so you can watch the movie and then watch the TV series like I did. And it's kind of cool because you saw what happened in the movie, and then the TV series goes more in depth and shows, like, how they got to these locations and what happened when they got there and just everything. But I'd highly recommend it if you're interested in snowboarding. And even if you're not, the cinematography aspects of this movie are amazing.
Well, they use that new IMAX camera, right, to do this?
Yeah.
Like, the ones that cost, like, $1 trillion to use. And you're right, the cinematography of it will make any art student happy. It's an awesome, awesome documentary. It's kind of like that. It borders on transcending just snowboarding. Like, it's almost a nature documentary kind of thing, where it's, like, an amazing mountain, and then it's talking about more, as opposed to just like, well, I'm gonna go and do, like, a quadruple backflip off this. It's more about, like, how it makes you feel and things. And it's highly recommend The Art of Flight. Plus,
yeah,
like, you'll see some awesome stuff up in Alaska that you're not going to be able to see ever in your real life.
Yeah, I mean, some of the shots, just like the panorama shots or whatever, they send chills down my spine. Like, just like looking at them, it's that well done. I mean, it just, it's really impressive. So if for nothing else, you should just watch the movie for the scenery and the shots and how it's done versus the snowboarding. Because, I mean, in all honesty, I think the snowboarding in that movie is almost secondary to all everything else. It's like 1A was the screenshots, the panoramas, the helicopter flyovers and everything like that. And then like 1B is actually filming the snowboarding.
Yeah. And again, that's Art of Flight. Both of us give that the recommendation. Anything else on it?
Nope, just that you should watch it. What's your last movie?
Okay, now this one is a little bit more off the beaten path. Almost nobody's going to have heard of this movie except the people that I make sit down and watch it. And it's called Resurrect Dead. That's the name of the movie. All you got to do is search that. But it has a secondary title, The Mystery of the Toy and Bee Tiles. Now you're going to hear that and automatically turn your brain off. Please don't. This is one of the best documentaries you'll see, kind of along the lines of one that nobody watches, but another great one, King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. But Resurrect Dead is what we're talking about here. It is about, now see, we are on the West Coast, so we don't have any of these things, but along major cities in the northeast side of our country, they have these weird tiles slapped on the ground that says like a really cryptic message about in the movie film 2001. And it just kind of, it's a non-coherent sentence when you read it. And then the documentary proceeds to go in and not only decipher what the meaning of the message is, but kind of also studies why are they here, who did this. And it's done excellently well. It has animation in it that fills in the gaps. It has, like, I once heard somebody describe it as, it is the best mystery not having to do with a death. So, like, you don't need to have somebody being murdered to have a great, great mystery. And there's, like, shady things to do in it. And there's, I mean, it's also a character study into the main person who did this documentary, and you become really connected with him, and you can see like how maybe a little bit of obsessive compulsive disorder works. And I mean, I highly recommend this. I made you watch it. What would you think?
I thought it was a great mystery. You never actually find out who does it, but it's very highly implied that person did it.
Yeah, they never confront the person, which I mean, that's a guess of a minor spoiler alert, but they draw it up in such a way that you are completely allowed to draw your own conclusions about the mystery, which I think is actually brilliant, as opposed to somebody who just handholds your way through the documentary and shows you, well, here it is, here's the answer, you know?
Yeah, and it's just the guy they followed, you know, he was really interesting. And I think he's kind of what you expect from somebody that's sort of going to follow something like this or, you know, investigate so closely and spend so much time invested. And then what makes it even more interesting is the part where he's, you know, like up at 4 a.m. and he goes to the gas station and there's like nothing on the road, and then he gets out of the gas station 5 minutes later or whatever, and then there's a Toy and Bee tile placed right on the road where he just was, you know, and it's like fresh, missed him by that much.
Yeah, he missed him by that much, and it's like brand new fresh. Like, it still has the tar paper over it, and he peels it off, and he sees a fresh one. And, I mean, they go in such detail, and I think because he's really good, he's an artist, he does all the animations for it, and I think that's one of the most interesting parts. You're never going to see, unless you have seen one of these tiles, I had never seen one before. I had never even heard of it, you know? And so for a subject matter that I had known nothing about to become so invested in, and then the next day, like, I'm telling people, like, you have to watch this movie, you know? Like I made some people at my work, I made you watch it. I mean, anybody who will listen to me, I can try and make them watch it, you know?
Yeah, and it was definitely worth a watch. So if you're not interested in anything we've said really about sports or anything like that, then this is definitely a movie for you. I think most people would really enjoy it. You just got to sit down and watch it and just become engrossed. You know, don't go in with any preconceived notions or anything like that, you know? My last movie is another sports documentary, and it's Rise and Shine, the Jay DeMeritt story, and it's about a guy from the United States playing soccer. He was from Green Bay, Wisconsin. He, you know, decided that soccer was the path that he wanted to follow, so he went to a college, played college soccer, was actually really, really good, and then he tried out for, like, the Chicago Fire, I think it was, and they said, oh, you know, you're not, like, big enough, strong enough, fast enough, that whole, you know, thing. And so he's like, well, that sucks, because he really wanted to play, and he's not one of those guys that, you know, quits easy or takes no for an answer. So one of his friends from the college team is from England, and he says, hey, dude, come live with us in England. We'll tour around England and Europe, just trying out for clubs and see what happens. And so they do that, and nothing really becomes of any of their visits to clubs. I mean, there's, like, stories of them talking to coaches, and coaches are like, oh, yeah, just wait here 10 minutes, and, like, they never show back up or, you know, stuff like that. So they wind up playing in, like, the D-League, the very bottom league in Europe, which is just, like, on Sundays. It's called, like, the Pub League or something like that. And, you know, only very few players make any money in that league. So he was one of them. He's making like 30 or 40 pounds a week playing in D-League. And it just goes on. And eventually somebody finally gives him a chance. And he winds up, you know, like working his way all the way up to the Premier League and plays against Ronaldo. And it's just a really heartwarming story. And at the very end, he is playing for the U.S. national team in South Africa at the World Cup. And so it's interesting, his story going from the very, very bottom to the very top. And it's a really touching story. So I highly recommend that one.
Yeah. It's kind of like a story about, like, if you put your mind to it, anything can be done kind of thing. And there's a lot of those documentaries, and maybe if soccer is your favorite sport, then definitely check it out.
Yeah, for sure. Now, what do you think for TV shows for those people out there that don't have, you know, 2 hours to invest into something?
Yeah,
what are some, like, of your...
They got like 90 hours to watch every episode.
Every episode.
Well, I mean, the most obvious one is probably the best written show on TV right now, and that's Breaking Bad. It's an AMC show. It's on right now. You can catch up. You won't be up to the newest season, but you'll be damn close. I think there's 4 seasons or 3 seasons on there. And it's so good. Like, there's no better TV show than Breaking Bad for, like, an adult themed show. I mean, it's about a high school chemistry teacher who cooks meth. Like,
yeah. And it's really well done.
It's, you'll become so invested in the characters. You'll hate characters. You'll love characters. Like, you feel like you know them, and I think that's, like, the best thing that's written about this show. Like, there's no better TV show on cable, on Netflix, out there, except maybe, like, if you go back to, like, an HBO show like The Sopranos or maybe The Wire or something like that. But right now, for my money, Breaking Bad. Watch it right now. Start on episode 1. You have to get through season 1. It's only, like, 8 episodes. And then once you start season 2, it'll have your hooks in you, and then you'll be like me and, like, staying up too late to watch episodes, and
yeah, it just continually gets better.
Yeah, every season gets better and better. The season 2 hook, like the cliffhanger, you think, how am I ever going to get over this? And then season 3 has an even better one, and then season 4 has, like, the best one, and then season 5, which is on, which is the current season, and the final season, which I greatly appreciate. They're not dragging it on, just keeps getting better. But Breaking Bad, what about you? What's
a great, you know, mind-numbing TV show that I highly recommend that's also on Netflix right now is Archer.
It's
you know, an animated comedy. Honestly, if I had to compare, like, the humor to something, I'd almost think of, like, Austin Powers, sort of.
Yeah, it's like the whole spy humor. Spy humor things, you know?
Yeah, but it's one of those shows, you just turn your brain off, you'll watch it, you'll laugh. You know, if you enjoy South Park or any of, like, The Simpsons or Family Guy or anything like that, this show will be super appealing to you. I know not a lot of people have seen it because, I don't know.
It's on FX.
So yeah, I guess that's the main reason, but like, I saw commercials for it, and I thought the commercials looked pretty funny, but I never actually watched it, and then it was on Netflix, and I thought it was hilarious, and, you know, they just released new season onto Netflix right now, so I've been watching it, so I highly recommend that you guys watch it. It's a great comedy show.
Yeah, plus, there's little things for everybody, like, he's a lax player, you know, that's where he got really, he was very proficient at lax, and so there's a lot of lacrosse jokes. So if you're a former lax bro, then, you know, you can pick up on those jokes, and it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But my number two TV show that everybody needs to watch is Trailer Park Boys. It is some of the funniest things you'll ever see. It'll have you busting a stitch laughing. Like, but I think you kind of have to have, I don't know. Like, do you think you have to have a little bit of Trailer Park in you to really laugh at it?
Either that or just kind of know what's going on going in. I think it will appeal to a lot of people because TLC is releasing, like, a real sort of version of Trailer Park Boys. And I don't think they would release that unless they knew a lot of people would be into it. So if that's going on real TV, then Trailer Park Boys, I think, would be a success with a lot of people out there, so...
Yeah, it's a produced show. It's not real, but it's done so great that you feel like that maybe these are really how these people are, even though they're all actors. It's so great. I mean,
yeah, it's another great comedy.
It goes on for many, many seasons, and there's a few movies on Netflix too. So I highly recommend Trailer Park Boys.
Yep. My second TV show. We've been talking a lot about, you know, like, funny comedies, sports movies and stuff. This is kind of more, you know, you're at home with the girlfriend. You guys need something to watch. And I was actually pleasantly surprised with this show, and it's Downton Abbey. When I first saw it and when we very first were going to watch it, I was like, well, this is crap. But, like, I was just going to sit there and play on my computer on my phone. And, you know, I was like, I don't even want to be invested in this. It just is. It's a chick show. But actually, the characters in it and the story and everything, they just meshed well, and they actually kept my attention. I mean, it's by no means my favorite show, but if you have to watch a TV show with your girlfriend or wife or anything like that, I would recommend you guys sit down and watch this one because it'll satisfy both of you, I feel.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people watch it. It's incredibly popular. My parents watch it, so, I mean... moving on, I'm going to do South Park as the last one. It has every episode ever of South Park. I think there's one exception where it doesn't have it, and I don't know why they don't have that one, but it's on there. Now, I appreciate South Park for different reasons than most people. Most people just think, like, you turn your brain off, or it's just fart jokes or whatever, but I appreciate the satire of South Park. And that's where I think the humor is the strongest. It's not too great of a show that it can't laugh at itself and make fun of itself. Plus, it makes fun of a lot of things that I hate in pop culture. You know, like a couple episodes, last season or two, they made fun of like the Jersey Shore thing and NASCAR thing. And it's just the satire is what I always appreciate about South Park. Now, if you're going to do like what I did and start at episode one and go all the way through, it's a tough ride. Seasons one and two, and then they kind of make the shift into satire about three or four, are rough. It's just every poop joke that you've ever heard. And I think that, like, the creators of it kind of went in trying to be so absurd to kind of gain a popularity that way, and then they ran out of fart jokes, and then they had to kind of switch it. And I think that's when the seasons start getting really good, and you can kind of laugh at, like, I mean, even the devil has, like, a My Super Sweet 16 party, and, I mean, the satire there is so thick that I can pick up on it, and I'm not that smart, but I think that's where South Park really, I mean, they had a couple seasons ago the Crack Baby Basketball League, drawing parallels to the NCAA, and, like, not paying players, and just something we were talking about a little bit ago, but it's done so absurdly that, like, if you're not really paying attention, you won't get what they're really trying to say there.
Yeah, and what I appreciate most about South Park is the fact that they don't do, like, a whole season a year in advance or whatever. It's done, like, that week.
Yeah.
So they can make fun of stuff that is currently going on right now,
yeah,
which, to me, it makes it the best.
Yeah, another side tangent. I think it's still on Netflix. It's called 6 Days to Air, and it's the true story of South Park, and it's remarkable that what they're able to do. Basically, to give you the quick rundown, they make a complete show start to finish in 6 days. What's South Park on? I think it's on Wednesdays, if I remember right. So they come in Thursday morning, no ideas, and then they write, animate, and create, voice act, everything. A whole TV show in 8 days, or excuse me, in 6 days. And then on the 7th, they put it in there. And it's really remarkable. Like, if you ever need, like, an inspiration for anything, to realize that these guys can put on a TV show that millions of people watch, and they can do it in 6 days. And some of the things that they say in it, like, you know, like, we could make this better, you know, maybe what, marginally better, 15% better, if we spent 2 months working on each episode. But, like, it's not worth it, you know, to, like...
I don't think that 15% gain outgains the funniness factor of making something, making fun of something that just happened yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the great thing about it, you know, like, and so I would say South Park. But, I mean, maybe only watch from, like, 2006 onward or something.
Sure, sure.
I mean...
They're the masters of procrastination.
Yeah.
They are the leaders of procrastination. Like that one there?
Yeah, I did.
My third and final show is another one that you can kind of sit down with the girlfriend or the wife and watch. And it's more of a comedy, and that's the Parenthood TV show. I would recommend it. You know, it follows, like, a family of brothers and sisters and the parents and just their struggles through everyday life. I mean, it's just almost like being back at home. You know, the brothers and sisters are fighting. The parents are, like, sleeping around, and they're thinking about getting a divorce, but now they're in counseling. And it's just a good TV show that you can split with the wife and or the girlfriend and call it good, and you can actually be entertained. That's, like, the most important thing for me anyways when I'm trying to find a happy medium between me and my wife, is a show that I can actually somewhat enjoy while we're watching. And this one definitely meets that criteria.
Yeah. Well, moving on, let's look forward a little bit. The unfortunate time of the year is now when it comes to movies. Because the studios have figured out the formula that January, February, and March are when they, well, early March, late March is when they start pumping out some good ones. But they dump out the worst movies right now. I mean, it's just abysmal. Like, I haven't been to a theater since Django was the last movie I watched. And there's nothing good that gets released. So we kind of have to suffer through and bear it. That's why we kind of did the three movies and TV shows this week. Because there's nothing really new that's good out. But what's the one movie that, just a quick, we'll give a few minutes on, movie that you're looking forward to seeing, maybe in the next couple months?
There's two movies. One I'll just say real quick, and then one we can actually touch on. The first one that I'm kind of interested in is The Great Gatsby. I wasn't a huge fan of the book, but the movie actually looks decent because Leo is, you know, a really good actor, so... you know, I'm saving judgment till I see it. But the other one that I'm looking forward to is World War Z. And I haven't read the book because that's what it's based on, if you don't know. But I've heard people say that based on what they've seen in the trailers, they're a little bit disappointed because it doesn't follow the book like they thought it would. Because I guess the book is written... sort of like if you were a documentary filmmaker or something like that, and you're following people around, that's how the book is written. And if you've seen the commercials for this movie, that's not at all how the movie is. The movie follows Brad Pitt, who's like a doctor or something like that, a disease expert, or I'm not entirely sure. And he's supposed to, like, help find a cure or something like that for it. But, you know, I love a good zombie movie. Or anything zombie related pretty much right now. I'm kind of in with the craze like everybody else is in America right now with zombie fever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm excited to see this movie. I'll be there June 21st when it comes out to see it for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it looks interesting. I think the zombie CGI looks a little poor, but they can always polish that up before the movie comes out. But we'll see. I just don't get it. Like, okay, so we have DayZ, which we talked about last week, which is going to be an awesome video game. But then they have the movie World War Z. But then they also have another zombie video game called War Z, which I guess is just absolute trash.
Yeah, it's abysmal.
Yeah, like, Can they not come up with original names? Now, I realize World War Z has been in production for a few years.
And the book's been out longer than that.
Yeah, you know? But, man, oh man, can they come up with some more original titles?
Yeah, no. So, those are kind of the two movies that I'm looking forward to. You know, I'll hold reservations for Great Gatsby till later, but mainly War Z. What are you excited for?
Yeah, Great Gatsby. I mean, it looks like it could be good, but it also looks like it's very all over the place. But that could just be the trailer to, you know, who knows. I'm just going to give you one movie. It's called Asylum. It's got Matt Damon. It's kind of the story of the very wealthy live on like this man-made space station, and the rest of the population lives on an overcrowded Earth, fighting for scraps. It's got Matt Damon, Jodie Foster, and William Fichtner, who I actually saw in downtown Spokane one time, which was really awesome. He was drinking a Thomas Hammer coffee. But we'll see how it goes. I mean, this movie could be crap. I haven't seen a lot of trailers for it. It's going to come out August 9th, but it just looks interesting from the screenshots that I've seen. It looks a little bit like a movie that I really enjoyed from a few years ago, District 9, kind of like the same weaponry and maybe a little bit same of the production style, but just keep your eye out for that. It looks really interesting. Again, that's Asylum, but we'll see how it turns out. You know, like it could always be delayed and not released till the winter. So, well, who knows?
Yeah, you never know. Moving on to our last topic of the day. History Channel has been pushing two new TV shows really, really hard. And the first one is The Bible. It's, you know, the story of stories in the Bible. And, you know, if you're into that, that's awesome. It's pretty well done. But the second show they've been pushing really hard is Vikings. Now, I haven't personally seen it. I've just seen the previews and heard from Zach about it. But Zach's seen a few of the episodes you know, an episode or two. So what do you think about the show?
Yeah, I've seen both the episodes that they've released. I have not gone on to historychannel.com and watched the third episode, because then what am I going to do for 2 weeks? Wait for the next one. So I'm actually just going to wait till next Sunday for it to come out. I think it has the potential to be really good. We'll see. I think History Channel's trying to rebrand itself as not the crazy alien show, but more of kind of like a watered down HBO with like some really well done TV series. You know, it's ultra violent. I mean, there's decapitations, stabbings, throat cuttings. I mean, there's lots of things in this. You see a few people get impaled and stuff. So, like, they're not skimping on it, which I always thought that they would do. I thought that they would shy away from that because it's, like, on kind of, you know, general cable, that they wouldn't want, you know, a decapitation scene in there or something, you know, like that.
Sure.
And I'm not that guy who's, like, going out there and I watch movies for that kind of thing. But it's nice to see that they're not letting it be so censored and put down, you know. And, like, there's some sex in it and stuff like that. Okay, let's talk about Game of Thrones real quick. It's so over-sexed, you know, like, and I'm not like a prude, I'm not that, it's just like, we'll move on with the story, you know, it's, and I understand that that's part of the books, but, it's kind of one of like, there's a hilarious SNL skit out there making fun of Game of Thrones for that very reason, and now every time I watch Game of Thrones I think about that, and it's kind of ruined the TV show for me in like a comical way. But we'll see how this Viking show, the first two episodes, to be honest, I couldn't tell you the names of the characters because they're like legitimate Viking names and it just sounds like jarble to me whenever they say their names. But I mean, it's really good so far. Like, I've enjoyed the two episodes. There's some characters you hate. They've already killed off a dude, so what I thought would be a main character, they killed him off already, so we'll see how it goes, you know?
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think History Channel is trying to make the move sort of away from the crazy alien channel to more of, like you said, maybe watered down HBO for their TV series. I mean, they're still going to be the History Channel and do history-esque shows like Civil War and World War II and stuff like that, but, you know, they have to have something to bring the audiences in every week, you know, and so that's what they're trying to do with The Bible and The Viking Show, is they're trying to get a solid foundation of viewers. And not to say that they didn't have that with the Alien show, because those were wildly, wildly successful. It's just, you can only put so much crazy on before crazy starts repeating itself. And yeah. I think that's kind of the point they were. They're like, well, we can make another Alien TV show and restate the same thing for the 18th time, or we can kind of do something else history related. And that's where they went, I think.
Yeah. And one last thing about the Viking show. It's only two episodes in, so I don't, like, I'm enjoying it, but I don't know how good it is yet. But I will say the production value is awesome. Like, these ships that they're on look sweet. Wherever they're filming this, I don't know it off the top of my head, looks amazing. Like, the hair cuts that they have in there, like, seem pretty authentic. I don't know. I'm not a big Viking historian, but it just looks really great. So that's got the big plus for it, you know. And we'll see how the characters develop and the story develops, but we'll see, you know. I mean,
yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm sure in future movie TV episodes we'll go ahead and talk about it a little bit more with you guys, let you guys know what we think, if it's kind of headed down a correct path according to us, or whether or not we think it's kind of losing its thunder. So that's all we have for today's show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Just a reminder, if you need to email us, we're at a2zpodcast@gmail.com. You know, spread the word about our podcast. Get us out there a little bit. We'd appreciate it. You know, like we've said a million times before, we don't do the same podcast every week. So if you're not interested in something, don't give up on us, because you can come back a week later and find something that you do really enjoy. So please don't listen to one of our things and throw us out the door, because we're a lot more than that, I feel. So once again, appreciate you guys listening to us, and we'll see you guys next week. I'm A.
And I'm Z.
We'll see you guys later.
See you.